Hello, and so at the moment I'm here with Justin, who's going to tell us, as you know, the person in charge of what's next for Ars Magica, what's next for Ars Magica. So for once, I'm going to shut up and let Justin talk.
Thank you, CJ. I'm Justin Alexander. I'm the RPG producer at Atlas Games. I just had a fantabulous weekend at the Grand Tribunal here in Cheltenham. So about the future of Ars Magica, we had a lot of good discussions this weekend. I was here in a couple of capacities. The first was to be something of a sponge and try to get the sense of what everyone was doing with the game, the exciting and epic adventures they were having with it, and also what everyone wanted to see from the future of Ars Magica. And in my second role, I was here to also let people know what direction Ars Magica is going. The short version is that at the moment, there's not a firm answer for that. I joined Atlas 8 months ago, just over 8 months ago in December of 2018. When I interviewed for the position, I said, I have played all of your games, Ars Magica, Feng Shui, Over the Edge, Unknown Armies, but I haven't actually played any of them in the current edition. So a lot of my time in these first 8 months has been spent basically getting up to speed on things. I've been working to read everything we've ever published for any of these games. I've also been working to get all of these games to the table, whether that means running them or playing them or preferably both, because I think it's essential to actually play a game before you know what to do with it developmentally. So in the case of Ars Magica in particular, that's a doubly challenging experience. On the one hand, we've published both Atlas and the companies who had the IP before us over 140 books for it, which is quite a bit of reading to do. It's also a more challenging game to get to the table, because to truly experience Ars Magica, you have to actually experience it at length over multiple seasons, over multiple years. Let the Covenant as the central character of your saga grow and develop over that time, and so that means spending more time with it. Recently, I've been looking at doing possibly both a first edition saga and also a fifth edition saga with the game to get a feel of both where the game was and also where the game is going. So at this point, given all of that and that process is still only sort of halfway through, I can say that there are a number of different courses that we're looking to pursue. Those include potentially, and this would be the easiest but the least satisfying, letting 5th edition, which is a complete game, sort of stand as it is, if you will.
That sounds, I think you'd expect a lot of interest in people, you know, but that would mean no more supplements, just leaving it at 40 books.
Right, I mean, the fascinating thing, and so one of the things that makes it difficult to know what to take Ars Magica in the future is that David Chart, the previous line developer for Ars Magica, did such an amazing job with the game. He came in, he said, this is what 5th edition should be. He did that. It was a very cleaned up, very tight game, particularly compared to previous editions. He also said, these are the 40 books I want to do. I want to do four of them a year for the next 10 years. He had a plan in place. He executed that plan flawlessly. At the end of 10 years, he had his 40 books, and he said, that's it. That is 5th edition. And that is 5th edition to a certain extent. Like, it is a complete game line. It covers 99% of what you could potentially see in 5th edition. There's also the fact that there's a vanishingly small number of people who are interested in owning 41 Ars Magica books. There's already, unfortunately, a small number of people who are interested in owning 40 Ars Magica books, right?
Yeah.
So, but that's not really a satisfying thing for the game because...
actually, one of the problems, I think, for Ars Magica 5 is we hit it after about 10 books, which is if you're paying £20 a book plus the core book, you're going to be spending £200 at least, but £240, something like that. And that's a very high price point. And I knew people who a decade before had been putting off getting into Vampire, because there were so many books produced for World of Darkness that if you wanted to buy into it, you felt you had to sort of read all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of the problem with 5th edition, is once you get the line gets to a certain size, people are actually put off by the size of the line.
Right, and
a lot of people are completists and collectors. I know nobody's ever been putting off playing D&D because they can't buy everything ever published for D&D, though, are they? So that's not a legitimate thing. But I think part of the audience for Ars Magica was collectors.
Mm-hmm.
Was people who'd been into earlier editions and just wanted to own all the books.
Mm-hmm.
But for other people, that was off-putting. I don't know. What do you reckon about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is that there is this, there is an unnecessary perception that Ars Magica has these barriers to entry, that it is complicated in terms of system, which it really isn't in many regards, that it's complicated because there's all this historical information, whereas I would argue that the historical information and the fact it's based in a real history with a fantasy twist to it, that that actually in some ways makes the game more accessible. This is real history with real people. There's an endless number of resources that when you think of that not as as a homework assignment, which it isn't, but rather think of it as an opportunity to be inspired and to have raw and amazing resources to add to your game. All of those are benefits. So one of the things we need to do with Ars Magica going forward is to find a way to change that perception and make the game more accessible. And so if we were looking at doing a sixth edition, that would be high on my list of priorities, is to build on the success of fifth edition and not ignore it, but at the same time figure out how can we present the game and also create tools for the game to make it more accessible to people.
So if there is a sixth edition, what form will it take? Will it invalidate the fifth books, or will you still be able to use the fifth books to some extent with it?
Well, this is an open question. I mean, part of the difficulty with taking the next step forward with Ars Magica is the fact that it's difficult in the modern era of role-playing games and the way that the industry and the hobby works now to imagine having another line of 40 books. Yeah. It's just not the way that sort of supplement treadmill isn't necessarily what the audience wants or what the industry can support. So the question is, if you do a sixth edition, are you actually like reducing the amount of support that the game line has? So at least my predilection would be to in some way find a way to keep that 5th edition material relevant.
There's two types of material in the 5th edition. There's things such as background, adventure ideas, story seeds, concepts, hedge magic traditions, and then there's the mechanical base. Now, I could see a way by which 6th edition could clean up in a sort of D&D 3.5 to 3rd relationship. But I don't think we ever really had the support for that in the past. I know an awful lot of people who are really into the community wants it. The other possibility is that 6th edition, I guess, could go forwards, but could change some of the mechanics, but be broadly speaking compatible with the way Call of Cthulhu editions are compatible. Or maybe more the way the new RuneQuest is compatible with the old RuneQuest, but is actually significantly different.
Right, and well, this opens up something else in terms of, so if we're talking about the different approaches, there's let 5th edition stand, be a complete thing unto itself, continue forward. There's having a new 6th edition, that in some way builds upon 5th edition, and the degree of compatibility would be an open question to explore during development, but certainly to make the game more accessible. And then the third major thing we could do with the game would be to do something radically different with it and to explore the richness of Mythic Europe through a different mechanical lens. Something that has been in development since before I joined the company is a project we have codenamed Magic Shoe, which would also potentially be called Tales of the Quasitors, which would take the gumshoe system created by Robin D. Laws for Pelgrane Press, in which they've open licensed, take that system and find a way to combine it with Ars Magica's unique magical mechanics to create an investigation game based around that. There's also other kinds of things we could look at, other ways of mechanically exploring. Like if you go back to the beginning, to first edition Ars Magica, which I mentioned I've been exploring recently, the last page in that book, written by Jonathan Tweet and Mark Reinhagen, talks about the other games they were interested in exploring. And
which other games were there in there? I'm trying to think back to what was mentioned, because Mike, if you go back to one of Greg Stafford's publications, like Worms Footnotes, there are always products. In fact, even Games Workshop, there are endless products that were announced for Warhammer in the early days that just never came to fruition.
Right, and the same thing was true here with Lion Rampant. They said that they were interested in publishing additional games that would explore medieval Europe, what we've since come to know as Mythic Europe, from different aspects. So, for example, they said there'd be a game focused on knights, there'd be a game focused on the church, there'd be a game focused on fairies, with a parenthesis, have you ever thought about playing a vampire? I don't think they ever did either one of them did anything with that idea, of course.
No, the vampire concept. Yeah. Well, it's silly, is it? Nobody would ever want to play an RPG.
No one would play vampire. That's absurd. No. No future in that idea at all.
No.
In 1987. So that would be another way, is to look at how we could potentially use some of the core mechanics of 5th edition, but
explore Mythic Europe instead of having the magical rules and the covenant building rules. Look at how we could explore Dominion, for example, and have rules that are oriented towards multi-generational buildings of churches.
Yep.
As one example. Yep. So those are also ideas we'll be exploring. So I guess that's the overall message I have about the future of Ars, is that we are still exploring ideas. And the one thing I can say about it at this point is that while we are exploring ideas, it feels virtually certain that in some way, within the next 12 to 24 months, you will hear something definitive about what the next step in Ars Magica will be, and that that next step will only be the first step in what will hopefully be several steps forward as Ars Magica is prepared to come roaring back into active production in one way or another. And the exact form of that is the question I'll be continuing to explore throughout the next year.
I think I would definitely say there's scope for a game about the nobility of medieval Europe, dynastic marriage, politics, romance, alliance. You know, I mean, Pendragon is a game that deals with knights, and it does deal with medieval as well as Dark Age themes because of the way it works. And it's, again, it's that kind of... But there is still scope for other ways of exploring Mythic Europe. And certainly if you're going to start taking on board some of the folkloric elements and put it in firmly in the Mythic Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea. I like the idea of the church an immense amount, but then I'm very fond of the church. But one of the other possibilities, of course, is that I suggested that maybe for 5.5 you should explore other time settings.
Mm. And that is another option, actually, that we had not quite looked at, is the specific idea of do we find a way to use the actual mechanics of 5th edition, including the magic rules and the covenant rules, and finding a way to use those rules to express other settings. Other time periods is a great example of this. We could look at both rolling the clock back to, say, the Dark Ages or the Schism War. We could also roll the clock forward and look at the Renaissance or Victorian periods, or even doing like a noir-based game.
I thought about modern magic, but the problem is there's so many modern magic games now. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of the elements of Harry Potter, if you've ever read the English writer J.K. Rowling's books...
She must be fairly obscure. I haven't heard of her.
Yeah, she's not well-known, but I believe that some American cinema company made some films based on her work.
Oh, yes, I think I heard about those. Some minor art house type of films.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Harry Potter and the Chamber Pot of Secrets, I believe.
Something like that.
Something about a young magician with a chamber pot nailed down. But anyway, whatever. I mean, the settings, one of the things I played for was the notion of the English public school wizard, which was something we did in our saga, our modern era mage saga we tried. And that was quite good fun. That was before Rowling. And that, I mean, I've never been near a public school in my life because I was a comprehensive lad. You know, if my friends had sent me off to boarding school, I certainly wouldn't be talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those kind of English school stories, the Jennings stories, the Billy Bunter stories of Frank Richards, it doesn't have to be about apprentices,
mm-hmm.
but there is room for a modern era, very focused game of American magic or for modern British magic. Now, obviously, you've already got Unknown Armies, but Unknown Armies is a very strange thing. One of the problems in this country for Unknown Armies is that it is about Mythic Americana.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
And it's a beautiful... And I mean, even most of the archetypes, actually, we discovered a whole load of archetypes simply make no sense in an English context because... I can't even remember what it's called, but the archetype which is about desire for an obsession with guns...
Mm.
It's just, you know, it just doesn't work when you come to the UK. And there are others. And there are many notions that don't translate well. There are some very British games of secret magic. One of them is Liminal, which is an excellent little game. Well worth having a look at. I'd recommend that. But I do think the modern era has potential. The Victorian era. And, of course, my beloved Regency era is something that I played with. We've done 18th century Ars Magica. One of the things we saw at Grand Tribunal this time was 17th century Ars Magica set in 1664. I mean, you know, the mechanics are universal. The game that we talked about a lot 10 years ago was Age of the Founders.
Mm.
Problem with that is that it's set before the canonical setting, and therefore some things exist, like Palmer Magica, because Bonis Argus has created it. But other aspects of magic are already stated not to have, you know. But it would let you rewrite the magic rules. It would be set firmly in the Dark Ages.
This is actually something I looked at was, I think it's actually be interesting to move it back before, even before Bonosaigus, and say the hermetic magic doesn't exist yet, but it's about to be discovered.
Well, that was the other possibility, is the cult of Mercury. And
the PCs will be the ones to discover it, right?
Yeah.
So then the game structures become not just covenant building, but also the literal building of...
Founding of the houses.
And the system of magic itself.
Yeah, and that was something that we were very keen on, was the idea that the player characters would be the founders, not the canonical founders, but you would be the founders of your own magical traditions.
Right, you'd be in control of that.
Yeah, and as you do it, each character's virtues and flaws define a magical tradition, mm-hmm. And I was looking at trying to write a book that would cover a kind of Pendragon style. If you've never played Pendragon, it covers 70 years. Mm-hmm. But I thought we could possibly do 200 or 300 years with adventures set every decade or every...
Interesting.
And the idea would be that you develop the magic and that you went through several generations, perhaps 3 or 4 generations, as the houses evolved. As some of the houses perhaps fall out and you have early schism wars.
Mm-hmm.
And you're creating a mythical history from a broad sweep, or you might just focus on 10 or 20 years or 6 months in the life. But it starts with, at the very beginning, the player characters founding the Order of Hermes. And yeah, that was something I was really keen on at one point. And I don't know what happened to people's enthusiasm for it, but that's, you'd independently decided that was a way forward. I'd love to see that.
I think it's a very interesting idea to explore. And the thing is, like, this will be one thing I'm doing over the next year, right, is beginning to try and put these ideas into enough of a form that can be taken to a table, put into practice, and see...
Try it out
and see what works.
Another, I mean, I played a game called Microscope. Have you ever seen Microscope?
I have. Microscope's a lovely game.
Yeah, we played Microscope, and we were playing from we did the Order of Hermes as it could have been,
mm-hmm.
and that was what inspired the notion of doing a... Because we did the history of the Order of Hermes by Microscope, that was what actually inspired this notion of playing a long-term developmental campaign. But I also hinted at it earlier today, because we talked about Magic Shoe,
mm-hmm.
Tales of Inquisitors, and in that, the problem with the system, the issue really, is that Pelgrane Press's system, Gumshoe, is a great system, but it's designed for... investigative RPG.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and it's Tales of the Quasitors, because the idea is that you'll be solving hermetic mysteries.
Right.
The problem with that in Ars Magica is, I discovered it as long ago as the 80s, long before I played Ars Magica, that it was a bit of an issue, because I found an article in a magazine, and I taught myself a bit from Axel's book about what actually things like Intelligo Mentem meant, mm-hmm. in ME, because I just couldn't... Most role-playing games in those days, I could look at it, take the storyline and convert it to any system.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at taking a detective mystery from an Ars Magic adventure published in, I can't remember what the name of the magazine was, and putting it in Pendragon, which I was running at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it had things like in mem, in vim, you know, in v. And I didn't understand what the notations were. And then I suddenly discovered, mm-hmm. hang on, this is a game that lets you read minds, that lets you talk to the earth, talk to trees, talk to the water.
Mm-hmm.
How on earth do you write a detective story? You know, and the fact that somebody had attempted it, I found shocking. So that is an issue, and David deals with it partly by bringing in things like shroud magic that let you hide the sigil.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bonosaigus book has got a whole section on forensic magic, so you can do CSI
mm-hmm.
hermetics already if you want to. But that, you know, it's not really, to me, it became more about, what's the word I'm looking at? I think that there are flaws in trying to apply the Ars Magica system to detective mysteries.
Mm.
So my suggestion was that instead of the mystery, the revelation being who killed Archmagus Darius, or if you've ever seen an adventure I wrote called Love Labour's Lost or Kicking Darius of Flumbo Up the Arse. There's a British sitcom called Father Ted. You may or may not have seen it. It's about an Irish priest, and there's an episode called Kicking Bishop Brennan Up the Arse.
Yes, let's jump the pond.
Yeah, yeah, I see, you have seen it, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was an episode, my adventure is about a bunch of grogs who get involved while they're at a tribunal meeting. They're left to their own devices while the Magi are meeting.
Mm.
And the local grogs enter into a challenge with them, and they have to do a sort of 12 Herculean labours. But whichever team loses... somebody has to kick Darius of Flumbo
mm-hmm.
up the arse. Now, Darius of Flumbo is a quizzitor, Perdo specialist, who's looks like Darth Vader, and he's in the core rulebook. He's the example character in the core rulebook, and he's sort of evil personified, so hence the joke. But that kind of adventure, it's okay, it's fun. But I think what we need to look at is, rather than just look at taking the core mechanics and bolting the magic system onto Gumshoe, you need to re-envisage it so that the mechanics are supporting what the game does well. And in this case, that might be learning magic secrets, developing new concept, magical concepts, and expanding the frontiers of magic.
Mm.
So it's about uncovering magical mysteries and gaining occult power and what you're doing in the lab, as well as being about, or instead of being entirely about, criminal activity.
Mm.
And that, so you're not just Quisitors. And there are ways that you could use the Gumshoe mechanics. Because, I mean, Pelgrane have published some great stuff on Goitia, on Voodoo, on Alchemy, which was published in Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff, on showing how you can do detailed magical systems that bolt in.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't familiar with that until I actually read them recently. So I think you could do ways in which different characters could explore magic through that game. But, you know, that's just an idea.
Right. I mean, I think the biggest takeaway there is that Ars Magica, at its core mechanical concept, has a rich variety of ways in which the magic system can express itself. And Mythic Europe as a setting has such a nice, rich history that it can also be explored in many different ways. And the question is how do we find new ways to explore that in a way that doesn't cover the past ground? And I think that's the work that I'll be doing over the next year.
Fantastic. How are you going to capitalize on the D20 boom? Not the D20 boom, that's not what we call it nowadays. Sorry, don't mind me, I was lost in the 1990s. The new D&D brought in by cool people, voice actors, what are they called? Critical Role?
Actual Play.
Actual Play, yeah. I mean, Actual Play is a fantastic concept, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We just got done doing our Magical Kitty Save the Day Kickstarter, and one of the things we made sure to do with that was to immediately reach out to Actual Play groups. And if you go to our website, you can find a number of Actual Play groups that have begun working with Unknown Armies, Magical Kitty Save the Day. We'll hopefully be having some stuff for Feng Shui coming out in the future. The biggest difficulty in terms of getting Actual Play groups interested in Ars Magica right now is that it's perceived to be a game that is done and complete and in the past. And as soon as we get some new action and forward motion on new ways of exploring the system, I fully anticipate we'll see a lot of excitement, because it's such a rich opportunity in terms of Ars Magica, in terms of the long-term stories of the characters and the covenants and so forth, that naturally lends itself to an Actual Play format.
It's interesting, because one of the messages I received during Grand Tribunal from somebody who wasn't able to attend was asking, you know, when I'm not sure that we love Ars Magica, but we're not sure we're playing it right, or at least playing it stylistically the way that other people are playing it. So when will we see some actual play or some streaming? And they were asking, are you going to be streaming? Now, we've never actually streamed games from Grand Tribunal. We normally stream the seminars. And this is, I then created the Arcane Connection podcast. This is episode 20, I believe, as a way of, you know, avoiding that, so we could actually edit what we were saying and make sure that what we were saying was, you know, not going to offend anyone or cause problems. But Actual Play, I mean, the game we played tonight, we played Tremulous, which is a storytelling game of Lovecraftian horror using the Powered by the Apocalypse system. If we'd stream that, I really don't think it would have attracted anyone to role-playing, do you?
Well, I think it depends on exactly who you're trying to attract. I mean, various games attract all different types. I mean, the thing is, I think, yes, there is definitely a market for streaming, and it has become... The technological barrier to entry in terms of being able to stream has dropped such a low level that for an event like the Grand Tribunal that attracts high-quality players from across Europe and across the world, it's almost a no-brainer, actually, to get the technology set up in order to do a high-quality streaming table from there, I think.
And we did actually stream. We did have at least an hour or two, which was live and broadcast on the net, and recorded and made available on YouTube, etc., from 2007, I think, the first year.
Mm-hmm.
We never did it from Cambridge, but because we had to run physical cables across the road, from the house across the road, in the air, from one window, and then down the stairs. In those days, Wi-Fi was less reliable. You know, it was hard cabling, right. But we did it. And we would have the guests of honour would be filmed, and Eric Dahl when he came over from America, David Chart when he was there. We always used to broadcast, and there would be people from around the world who would watch it. And then sometime around about 2013, 2014, 2015, when it just about the point when it became really easy to do it, we stopped doing it. And I'm not sure why we stopped doing it, because then we could have, you know, we could be asleep now rather than holding this conversation at 11 o'clock at night. Yeah, so it's a shame, really, isn't it? We've done it the wrong way, but...
But I think that's another big message takeaway, is that there's always time to turn around, learn new lessons, and take things into the future. I think it's a good note to end on.
I think that's an excellent note to end on, and I think, well, thank you very much to Justin Alexander from Atlas Games, and Tom and I will be back next week when we will be discussing what we've been up to, what we did on our holidays, and the fun we had at Grand Tribunal. And we'll be giving a breakdown of things we learned, and I will be talking about rabbits. So it's good night from me, and it's good night from Justin.
Good night, everyone. Thank you, CJ.
Thank you. Good night. So there you go.